This is Digital Story Podcast number 644, July 17th, 2018. Today's theme is The Filter Box. I'm Derek Story. I'm not one to hang on to unused items. If a camera or lens isn't seeing action, then I move it along to someone who will put it to use. I do have one exception to this rule: filters. I store them in a large shoebox at my studio. They are the one photography accessory that I seldom part with. Why is that? I answer that question on today's TDS Photography Podcast. All right, here. Let's see what we have. Okay, well, this is pretty interesting. This is... Now, you know, one of the things here, as I open up this box, I'm not fastidious about putting the right size filter in the right size box. You know what I mean? So I have to actually, you know, either look at the filter, which I can do a lot of times through the box, or open it up. Now, here's a Contax 67 millimeter P filter. That's pretty good. And it's in, of course, a 77 millimeter skylight box, right? I mean, in all honesty, life is a little too short for me to do that. Here's a 67 millimeter polarizer, and it's a Hoya multicoded. So that is a nice filter. You know, that's something you just go, wow, I'm so happy I have that when you need that. What else do we have here? Ooh, here's something. Ooh, I think someone gave me this one here. Oh, it's funny. It's in a Nikon box. And, of course, I don't know how to open it, right? This is... And the Nikon is really small type. This is a circular polarizer, a 72 millimeter Nikon. And it's one of those thin mounts, you know, very thin. So you don't have to worry about any vignetting at all with this. And it's actually in a Nikon box. So that one, boy, I tell you, that's gold. What else we got here? All right, here's an oldie. This is a Vivitar 49 millimeter skylight filter. And, you know, the brass mounting looks like it's seen a lot of use, but, you know, as I hold it up to the light, the glass looks great. Glass looks great. So, you know, who knows, right? Got a 81B right here, and that's a warming filter. And down here in the corner, held together by a bunch of rubber bands, I have these Kokin filters. And these are the square ones, you know, that... most of them are graduated, although I have all sorts of kind of goodies. I got a softener there. So those are nice. And I actually do take those out and play with them every now and then. Kind of cool. Well, let me see. We'll just do one more here, and then we'll get back to serious stuff. Oh, wow. Another polarizer. A 58 millimeter Hoya. Another multi-coated polarizer in very good shape. I got to leave this one on top. Seems like I was looking for one of those the other day. Couldn't find it. And that one was kind of off in the corner there. So anyway, that's what I have going on here in this shoebox. I'm going to go ahead and close it up right now. You're probably tired of listening to things rattle around in your head. So it's funny. I still remember when I bought my first brand new polarizer. It was a 55 millimeter Contax, one of the circular models. And it cost some godly amount of money. I mean, really, even, you know, in the day, which was decades ago, it was just a lot of money. And at that time, I was fine with spending $300 for a lens. I mean, I was doing photojournalism then. I wasn't making very much money at all. But I would save up and get a lens maybe once or even twice a year. And I could pay around $300, $400, you know, to get something quality. Again, this is back in the day. But then to turn around and have to spend something like $100, you know, for a polarizer then, or $75, I mean, that just drove me nuts. It just drove me nuts. It just seemed crazy to me. So it was really at that time, very early on in my career, that I decided that I was going to protect my investment in filters. Because I knew that if I stuck to this approach, then it would save me thousands of dollars over the course of my career. And I think it has. I mean, my photography's still going strong. And to be honest with you, my filter investment is looking smarter than ever. So here are five reasons why I'm taking this approach and why it seems like a good idea to me. First of all, filters, they're brand independent. You know, over the years, I've jumped from Contax to Canon to Pentax, Olympus, Samsung, Panasonic, and others. Now, the lenses for all those camera brands are, you know, tied to the camera body. So I can't put a Samsung lens on a Canon body unless I do something like get an adapter, maybe an adapter, depends. And even then I don't get full functionality, and you get my point anyway, right? So, you know, the lenses are mated to the camera brands. However, the filters that go on those lenses, I mean, they're brand independent. There's no problem at all putting a 58 millimeter Canon filter, a skylight filter, on, let's say, a Nikon lens. Not at all. You know, it works just fine. And so that's one of the really cool things about filters. And one of the reasons why I don't get rid of them is because they're brand independent. So as I go from camera brand to camera brand and lens mount to lens mount, you know, I sort of have to move that stuff along as a package. But if I got a filter for those lenses, I hang on to those filters because, unlike the lenses, I can use the filters later on practically any camera. Second point, as I mentioned before, filters cost a lot. I mean, they cost a lot, which cracks me up because there's this cookie cutter circle of optical glass, right? I mean, I'm sure there's a machine that just, you know, punch, 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 or something like that. And if you're out there and if you make filters for a living, don't send me a nasty gram because, come on, it is one piece of optical glass that is coated, right? And hopefully it's coated or you shouldn't be using it, and mounted most likely in a brass ring. Okay, so now relative to the complexity of a camera lens, the price of a filter is way out of line with what we pay for a lens. And this is really crazy when you get into, you know, the kit lens world. You can get a nice kit lens, let's say an 18 to 55 millimeter zoom for a crop sensor camera. You can get that for $150. But then if you want to put a really nice protection filter on there, it'll probably cost you $30 or $40. And that is really way too high compared to everything that you get with the lens. So filters cost a lot, and therefore that was one of the major motivations for me, you know, coming up with some sort of plan so I didn't have to buy them all the time. Point number three helps with that, which is filters, they last a long time. I have filters in that box that you heard me rattling around in that date back to the 1960s, and they still perform well. Now, I have read that filters lose their effectiveness over time, and to some degree, that may be true, but not so much that it compromises my work or it's worth going out and buying another 81B filter if I have this one thing where I want to use a warming filter. I think the 81B that I have in my box that is 20 years old is just fine for the project, okay? So, you know, the thing about filters, one of the reasons why they last a long time is that there's no focusing mechanism. There are no aperture blades. There's no f-stop ring to break. So unless you strip the threads, they're probably going to work. Or unless you just, you know, do a nasty scratch across the front of them, you're probably going to be fine. Now, every now and then, I do have to let go of a filter because of a scratch. Yeah, a big scratch, because big scratches do happen. And most of the time, I'm really glad that that scratch is on my filter and not on the front of the lens that the filter was mounted on. So that will be a case where I get rid of one. If I got a big scratch, off she goes. However, if it's a filter that's otherwise in good shape and it has a lighter scratch, you know, more near the edge, more near the mounting ring, I'll probably hang on to that. Because chances are a light scratch on the edge isn't going to affect my picture. So even then, even with some scratches, I'm reluctant to let them go. Number four, creative filters, they help shake up your photography. So whether it's a Zeiss Softar or a Tiffin Cinematic Effects or a rotating graduated filter, when I retrieve one of those from the box and I pack it in my camera bag, it just seems that fun follows. It does. It just seems that fun follows. The fact that I know I have that particular filter in my camera bag, then I think subconsciously I'm looking for situations over the course of the day where I can use it. And I'm going to give you an example on this trip that I just came back from. I'm going to talk about the scouting trip to Lassen later in the show, but I'm going to tell you an instance that relates to the filters right now. So I packed two filters. In Lassen, I wanted to move quickly. There was two of us working. Susie, who's co-facilitating the workshop with me and myself, she's the one that knows the area super well. I know it a little bit, and together we figured out, you know, what we're going to do over the course of these 3 days. But we had a lot of possibilities on our list, so we knew we had to move fast. And at the same time, I wanted to have fun. So first of all, I was in a DSLR mood because I wanted to look through an optical viewfinder all day. So I packed the Pentax KP, and the Pentax has this really cool compact. It's a super compact zoom. It's the 18 to 50 millimeter. I've written about it in the past. And so the KP is already super compact, and you put this compact zoom on there, and you've got a camera that you can go anywhere with, right? It's for a DSLR, it's just crazy small. So I was carrying that around, and at the same time, I knew I wanted to have some fun. And I knew that we were going to be shooting in the middle of the day a lot, you know, and the times of day that I normally wouldn't work if I was just doing landscape photography. Because again, we were scouting. I wasn't there for art. So I packed a circular polarizer for that zoom. And I also packed, and this is something that I found in the bottom of my filter box, a rotating graduated filter. So it wasn't like a Kokin kind, it wasn't a square one. This was a 58 millimeter rotating one, so that half of the filter, roughly half of the filter, had a neutral density, only about a stop, maybe a stop and a half, that tapered off, you know, down to the middle to clear, and then the bottom half was clear. But what they did was they put this on a rotating ring like a polarizer. So sometimes I used it to darken the sky if the sky was the brighter element. But then sometimes, like when we were at Lassen and, you know, we had this really bright rock on the ground midday, well, that was brighter than the trees or the lake or the sky. So then I could rotate that graduated filter around to the bottom and then, you know, darken just a little bit, take a little bit of the edge off those rocks, and then, you know, let everything else be normally exposed. So it was super handy on this trip, and it was a lot of fun. And once I put it on the camera, I really had a hard time taking it off, especially for midday shooting. And then sometimes I put the polarizer on too. So I'd have the rotating neutral density filter, and then I'd have the polarizing filter, and then, you know, I was like twisting these things around and doing it pretty quickly and getting shots. I didn't have to worry about a tripod or any of that kind of stuff. And it was super fun, and some of the shots came out well. In fact, if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, you've seen some of the shots, and it was used with this, you know, this wacky kit. Well, all of that came about because I had those filters waiting for me in the filter box. If I got the great idea, let's say the night before, that I want to take a rotating graduated filter and a polarizer, and I didn't have the filter box, and then I couldn't take them, right? I mean, I'm not going to buy brand new ones a day before I go, and who knows for sure if I'm going to use them and all that kind of stuff. So then it becomes not feasible to drop $100 or more on a couple filters, the polarizer being the most expensive of the two. But if you have them there, if you can dig around and find them, then why not? Why not take them? And I did, and then I brought them back, and I dumped them in the filter box when I got home. So, you know, next time, who knows what I'll grab out of there. The point being that, you know, having this wild variety of stuff waiting for you in there, sometimes I just go to the filter box, I just open it up, and I go, all right, what do we got here? Ooh, look at that, a Zeiss Softar 2. Maybe I'll do some portrait work today. Or maybe that Tiffin has some wild cinema filters, you know, where it'd be like black stocking, you know, softener and stuff like that. I go, man, maybe I can do something with that. And you're going, well, I mean, you shoot digital, you can do all this stuff in post, right? You can, but here's the thing. Here's the thing for me. That when I use these creative filters during capture, it creates momentum during the shooting part of the art. So in other words, and this even happened with the rotating graduate filter, I start to have some success with it. I look at the image on the LCD screen and I go, wow, that's kind of neat. That turned out okay. So then I get excited there at the shoot, which means then I shoot more, I push a little harder, I get a little more creative, and I get some momentum going. So that's a lot different than just walking around shooting everything in RAW with auto white balance and going, well, you know, I'll figure it out in post. Well, you never really get the juices going in the field, which is where you need to get the juices going, because that's where you are. That's where nature is, or that's where the model is, or that's where whatever happening is happening. That's where you got to get excited. Not later on in your room at 11 o'clock at night on the computer. In my opinion, it's too late, okay? Now, the post-production stuff is really fine for finishing off the shot. I love finishing it off that way. And one of the things that I noticed about the shots that I captured up at Lassen was when I was working on them at night, as you know I was, just like every photographer does. And it was funny because there was some mosquitoes up there, which there probably won't be later in September, but you know, we're right in the middle of summer right now. And so what I would do is I'd turn down the lights in the room and I'd just have my laptop glowing and I'd be doing the image editing. And it was also a mosquito magnet. So then the mosquitoes would come over and they start dancing in front of me with the laptop illuminating them. And I go, there they are, squish. And yes, I did squish mosquitoes on my LCD. Doesn't hurt it at all. And it was a lot better than them eating me up later on that night. And one night, I actually got three of them. Three of them that way. Just turning down the lights, letting the computer glow, wait for the mosquitoes to come, squish them, and then get back to image editing. Yes, that is my life in the mountains. By the way, you want to hear a good tip that I got while I was up there? If you are in neck of the woods where there are mosquitoes, the thing is, get yourself a little jar of Vicks VapoRub. And this is like an old school, menthol, eucalyptus kind of thing. I mean, when I was a kid, my grandma used to put it on my chest when I had a cold. But I guess mosquitoes hate it. And obviously, you're not putting poison on you or anything like that. This is something that's actually used to make you feel better, you know, to help you. It also helps with breathing if you're congested a bit, although it's pretty strong. Anyway, that is something that you can put a little bit on your forehead, you know, when you go to sleep at night, and mosquitoes hate it, and supposedly you should be just fine the next day. Of course, I was told that after I had spent a couple nights up there squishing mosquitoes on my laptop screen, but I am going to get a little bit of Vicks VapoRub, and I will have it with me next time I go up there. So anyway, the time to get excited about the shoot is while you're shooting, and the filters really help me do that. So creative filters help shake up your photography. And then finally, and this is such a debatable point, but you know what? We all believe what we believe, and filters provide a sense of security. And this is especially true for me when I get a new lens. When I get a new lens, I'm feeling overly protective of it. I admit it. This is a flaw in my personality that suddenly I go, I have to take really good care of this lens because I just spent however many dollars on it. I go to the filter box and I find the highest quality filter that will fit on that lens. And I have filters for every lens imaginable. And I put that filter on, and then I mount the lens onto the camera, and then I'm ready to go out into the world. I feel much more confident having that brand new, clean, shiny front piece of glass on the lens protected. So for me, they do provide a sense of security, even if it's only psychological security. But nonetheless, it does. And I tell you, I have had things happen where the filter gets damaged and it protected the lens. And I know that if you get a really huge impact, it can push the filter into the glass of the lens. I've never had that happen, but I understand in theory that it could. However, my experience has been that the protection filter has probably saved me at least 4 or 5 times over the years. And I'll tell you, I'll take those odds. I'll take those odds any day of the week. So yes, I do have a sense of security by using the filter on the lens, especially during transport. Now, having said that, there are times when I'm working on a shot and I can tell I've got a good one. I've got a tiger by the tail here. And if I just have a protection filter on the lens, I will take it off while I'm doing that part of the shoot so that I have absolutely, you know, every odd of best quality possible. And then after I'm done, you know, shooting whatever that subject was, then I'll put the protection filter back on and off on my way, because who knows, next time I could turn a corner and I could get spotted by a Coca-Cola that was being opened and it had been shook before. Who knows? I don't know. Things like that happen in the world. So anyway, filters provide a sense of security. Some of it might be in my head, but you know what? I don't care. So yeah, I touched on this earlier. I'm not putting crappy filters on. And this is part of the reason why I say filters cost a lot and that they're worth protecting. I put good filters on, and I think that's also one of the reasons why I don't feel like filters are compromising my image quality when I do have one or two over the lens when I'm shooting. So I use high-quality, multi-coated filters. High-quality, multi-coated filters. I try to get filters with multi-coatings that look like a camera lens, you know, when you kind of angle it different ways and the light hits it, because I really want the highest transmission possible. I want the least amount of reflection, and I really want these things to perform well. So I do use high quality filters, and they really have to be multi-coated. So I think that part of this plan and the reason why it works for me is because I'm using high quality materials. So that is my spiel on the filter box. And I tell you, if you don't have a filter box, you might want to start one. Now, my filter box is a size 15 sneaker box, right? But I have a lot of filters and I have really big shoes. Yeah, your shoes probably aren't quite as big as mine, and you probably don't have as many filters. So that makes this project even easier for you. Something to think about as you're looking to be A, more creative, B, maybe provide some security for your optics, and C, save money over the course of your career. Still waiting for my Canon rebate. So here we are. I talked about this last week, and I'm going to talk about it this week, and I will keep talking about it until this thing is resolved one way or another. On the June 11th, TDS podcast, I mentioned that I'm taking the Canon PIXMA Pro 100 rebate challenge, and I mailed in all the required documents for my $250 rebate. So I just checked the mail today, still no rebate. So this is July 16th when I checked it. I mailed it off on June 11th. We are still within, you know, the range of, okay, all right, maybe a month is asking too much. But if I don't get anything in the next week, that means when I do it next week, that's going to be 6 weeks. Then we're starting to get into danger zone. As of July 16th, 2018, still no Canon rebate. Stay tuned. my incredible scouting trip to Lassen Volcanic National Park. These are the days when I really like my job, I tell you. And believe me, there are a lot of days when I don't like my job, but the last few were not part of that at all. I went up to Chester, Lake Amador, and Lassen Volcanic Park, and I was working with Susie, who's going to be our co-facilitator for this workshop. She has a cabin at Lake Amador, which is going to be our headquarters. So the first thing I did was check out the cabin. This is a nice cabin. Calling it a cabin really doesn't do it justice. So I'm just going to leave it at that. But we have rooms and beds for everyone who has signed up so far. And by the way, if you have signed up for the workshop, you are going to be getting a follow-up email from me before too long. And I have pictures of all the different rooms and all that kind of stuff. And so you're going to get to reserve, you know, your particular room, your particular bed ahead of time. And you'll have some other nice options too. So that part was really cool. Then went exploring in Lassen. I haven't been to Lassen for a number of years. Boy, was it great to be back. And so we put together a really nice day in the Lassen Park itself. And I think the really cool thing about this, and for those going on the workshop, not only did I put together really nice days for us during the workshop, I'm also working on a fun things to do to add on to your experience. And so I scouted a bunch of spots that will go on to this list. So then if you want to add a few days before the workshop or a few days after the workshop, I have great stuff for you to do that I've already scouted out. I have pictures, the whole deal. I'm anticipating that we'll have fall color when we go back in late September. And I'm also anticipating that we might have a little snow here and there. There are some glaciers on Lassen right now that are even visible in the middle of summer. But I think a dusting of snow would also be excellent. So the trip itself was highly successful. Really had a good time. That was my rough, responsible, right thing to do, a trip to Lassen. And I made it through it, killed a few mosquitoes, got some great shots, and just had a blast. Review copies available for the Apples Photo Book for Photographers, second edition. This is something I decided to do this week. I have 5 signed copy of the Apple Photos Book for Photographers, second edition. It's the current one that's out right now. And if you can commit to posting a review by August 15th, and that would be a review on Amazon or your blog or, you know, wherever, then send me your shipping information via the contact form on the Nimble Photographer. And I'll have the link to the contact form in the show notes, just like I have a link to everything else. So send me your shipping information via the contact form, and I'll get you that book right away. It is a signed copy. I'll send it USPS priority, so you'll get it pretty fast. And as I said, all you have to do is commit to doing a review. Have it posted by August 15th. First come, first served. And I look forward to, you know, getting this book in your hands and letting you read it and see what you think, and then tell the world. Tell the world what you think. All right, just a few little bits and bobs before we wrap up today. If you're an Inner Circle member, I just want to tell you that I think you are one of the greatest people on earth. Thank you so much for being an Inner Circle member and for supporting this podcast through Patreon. Those of you that are interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, we have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story, a Patreon tile. Just click on that. It'll take you over to our Patreon page. You can see a little bit about what's going on. You don't get to see the stuff that's members only, but there are public posts there also. And as I tell you, this is a very important component of this podcast to keep it on the air and to allow me to continue to be creative and try new things and not just be sitting around worrying about how I'm going to pay the server bills and all that kind of stuff. So big thanks to our Patreon members. I also want to mention that I have both B&H and Amazon tiles on the digital story. They're there in the second column. So if you plan on doing a little shopping, and you know that you're going to go to Amazon, and you know that you're going to go to B&H, if you would go to my site first, click on those tiles, click on the appropriate tile, then go about your shopping. It really helps me out. The affiliate fees are, you know, they do add up. They add up. And again, you know, I used the affiliate fees for B&H the other day to pay my contractor to fix a problem that we had, you know, with the server on the site. You know, so, you know, those sort of things come in really helpful. And I appreciate it very much if you do that. Well, another thing I want to mention while we're talking about such stuff, I was on, you know, the iTunes podcast app the other day, and I noticed that we haven't really gotten any new reviews for a while, and it would be good to get some fresh reviews on the iTunes podcast app. And so if you're, you know, someone who listens regularly and you have a good feel for the show, and you have a few minutes to post a review, it's really helpful, because when other people are looking, you know, among all the different podcasts that are available, if they see some current reviews there, you know, for Digital Story, then they go, oh, okay, this guy's happening. I mean, you know, it's going on right now. This is something, you know, that I see the podcast there, and I see, you know, some reviews, and it looks like this guy's all right. Maybe I'll give him a try. And that's really the scenario that I would like. I just would like people who are interested to have enough motivation to try it for a show or two. So if you want to help out that way, again, totally appreciate it. And, you know, post a review there and let other people know what you think about the show. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. I still haven't got the paper yet. I know they shipped it or put the order in, but their new paper stock, I'm waiting for that. As soon as I get it and have a chance to run it through the printer, I'm going to talk both about the printer, the new Canon, you know, the one that I'm waiting for the rebate for, and the paper at the same time. And hopefully the paper will show up in the next week or so, and I can get going on that. Red River Paper providing me with interesting things to work with, and coming up with new paper stocks. They have such a wide selection to choose from already. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story, and they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Go take a look, see what those guys are up to, print something, and make some art that you can hold in your hands. Believe me, you will not regret it. That's going to do it for me this week. I'm going to go put the filter box back on the shelf. I'm working on some stuff for next week. By the way, I have that new Sony camera coming. I got the shipping notice, and so I'll be able to test that out. I should have a review for that before too long, and I got lots of other goodies in the work. Come back and see me next Tuesday. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.